Hi everyone, welcome to Contra Pulse. This is Julie Vallemont. This week we have our first interview since the COVID pandemic began. We haven't seen each other on the dance floor in a couple months, but that doesn't mean we can't talk about contra dancing. And it's fun to reminisce and also think about the future when we can be back to dancing again. I was fortunate to be able to sit down on my front porch and have a chat with Everest Whitman, who's a guitarist, mandolinist, and foot percussionist. Right now, we're listening to a track from Everest's band Nova called Redwood. Everest found the traditional music scene in his early teens, growing up in Brattleboro, Vermont, and quickly fell in love with music and dancing. He plays guitar in the Dadgad tuning and draws from a variety of musical traditions, especially contemporary Irish and Scottish, to create a driving and satisfying backup guitar style. Now based in Montreal, Everest plays for contra dancing all over the North American continent and beyond, most notably with his trio Nova, featuring Kathleen Fones and Guillaume Sparrow-Pepin. Nova has brought their great energy to many a dance hall, including dance weekends all over the country. In this interview, we talk about Everest's early influences, especially, not surprisingly, the band Nightingale, and how he got into playing for contra dances. We talk about Dadgad guitar and how he plays for contras and how that's different from session playing. And we have a good old rhythm player geek out session about ways that rhythm players can support the dancing and what he does on his instrument. And we talk about his current interests in Scottish music and ball folk and the way that those scenes are similar to and different from the American contra scene. We're wearing masks in the interview, so apologies if it sounds a little muffled, but it's good to be safe. Well, I am here with Everest Whitman on this beautiful day. We are sitting outside on the porch at my house, and it's 70 degrees out, and we are having the first social distancing interview on Contra Pulse. Welcome, Everest Whitman.
Hi, Julie. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Was it a hard commute to get here?
Well, I had to walk a full two blocks. That's more exercise than I've gotten in a few months.
Right. Well, welcome. It is a beautiful day, and in the days of social distancing, this is a new experiment. Everest is wearing a wireless mic and sitting 12 feet away from me, and we both have masks on, but the sun is out, and it's beautiful, and there's birds in the background. And I'm actually kind of excited to talk about contra dancing, because it's something we can't do right now, mm-hmm. And it's fun to think about fun things. So, hi, Everest.
Hey.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about, you know, how you got started or anything like that you want to share with us?
Sure. So, I grew up in Brattleboro, Vermont. When I was about 10 years old, my mother kind of discovered the contra dance and trad scene we have here. And I kind of just got dragged into it with her. I started playing the guitar, originally in standard tuning. But I started going to the Putney Irish sessions weekly. Just to listen mostly, and then Roger Kale, who is the guitar player at that session, encouraged me to bring my guitar and tune to Dadgad. He showed me some stuff, and then there I was going, playing Dadgad at an Irish session. So that's how I kind of discovered trad music. I started taking a class with Keith Murphy and Becky Tracy as a kid, and I had some lessons from Keith.
What class is that?
That's a class that they do through the Brattleboro Music Center, and they do multiple of them. But I was in the kids edition of that class.
Oh, how old were you?
I started when I was 11.
11. And so was that like a traditional music kind of class? Was it aimed at dance playing, or was it more of like traditional?
It was
tunes?
Both. So it was like a tune a week, and then at the end of the semester we would rehearse our tunes and then have a performance, sometimes for a dance, sometimes just like, I don't know, at a nursing home or something, or at the farmer's market.
Yeah.
So, mostly a repertoire class.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
And then you said that your mom is the one who took you to contra dances?
Yeah, so we started contra dancing at about the same time, and I got really into that. I was very inspired as a kid by going to the Dance Flurry as a 10 and 11 year old and seeing bands like Nightingale and Crowfoot and Elixir perform.
I can't imagine seeing all that as a 10 year old, what that would have been like.
It was pretty mind blowing.
Yeah, so many people, that hall full of so many people. Like, to go into that room, the main hall, and see 1,000 people in there dancing must be mind-blowing.
It's still a little mind-blowing. yeah, as you know, that's the biggest contra dance event we have.
Right, and you've now had the chance to grace that stage yourself.
Yeah, that was a great honor, because as a kid, I went to Dance Flurry and dreamed about playing on that stage someday, and I managed to perform there. 2 years in a row, last year and the year before.
Was that with your band Nova?
That was with my band Nova.
Both years?
Both years.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an amazing feeling. You know, it's interesting how contra dance has so many forms, from your little local community dance or a family dance with like 10 parents and kids running around and doing Strip the Willow, to this giant hall with a full sound system and 2 sound engineers and 1,000 people in it.
Yeah, so the scale can be very small to very large. Both are great types of events. Dance Flurry is a bit overwhelming in a lot of ways as a performer and just as an attendee.
Yeah. Somebody told me once, they said, it's like drinking from a fire hose. And that analogy has kind of stuck with me. So what kinds of music do you play for dancing? And how does being a dance musician affect your playing and vice versa?
Yep. So I also play trad music not associated with contra dancing. And both styles influence each other. So as a contra dance musician, I play a lot of Irish and Scottish tunes, less New England stuff, for example. And so I would say that I play more like a contemporary Irish and Scottish player in the contra dance circuit than most contra dance players, and then vice versa, compared to, so if I'm playing at a session, I play a bit like a dance musician.
That's interesting.
So I definitely pull from both places. I think that there's a certain amount of, I think especially in terms of rhythm, being a dance musician affects my trad playing, and mm-hmm. vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
There's a certain way that you do rhythm for a dance, because you want to be very, very clear about where the beat is for the dancers, and also be clear about what the groove is you're setting and how you're accenting certain parts of the dance.
Mm-hmm.
And that's less of a thing that you might do at an Irish session, where you can just, you know, diddle along subtly, and let the melody kind of steal the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So is that thinking about, like you say, like laying down a more definite groove?
Yeah. So my playing is definitely very groove-based for dancing. I'm just kind of like a machine. I lay down a groove and I keep playing it until the dance ends. And there, so yeah, you never leave much space when you're playing for a dance, because you don't want the dancers to lose the beat unless there's something else going on with another instrument.
Mm-hmm. Right. So in your arrangements with Nova, for example, do you generally have like one groove per set, or will you change grooves when you change tunes in a medley, or how does that work?
That's a great question. So I think the overarching rule is that you want the groove or grooves that you choose for a set to be able to fit one dance at a time. So if you choose a groove that's very balancy at a part of the tune, let's say the A1, you might imagine that would fit great with the dance, with the balance at the A1. And then if you switch grooves in the middle of that set, it still has to work with the dance that you've chosen based on that first groove.
Mm-hmm.
So if something is if you put a balance in a certain part of the tune, you have to keep it throughout the entire set, but it's okay for a groove to evolve
mm-hmm.
throughout, so you can start with something simpler and kind of build it up or reduce it.
Yeah, you could either take one groove and play around with it, or you could switch dramatically. Like Nightingale was really known for that. They had a couple sets where they're playing a normal tune, and you just know it's not going to stay that way for very long. And then something's going to happen.
Yep.
Like the set where they would play the flying tent or whatever, yep. You know.
Yep, and Jeremiah comes in with that crazy syncopated groove.
Right.
Yep.
But both of those elements have to fit the dance.
That's right. An easy way to do that is to start with a fairly neutral groove, which could fit anything. And mm-hmm. then you go into something that's a little bit more groovy and syncopated and intense. I think something that we do a lot as Nova is to play tunes very straight for the first tune or so, and then the last tune, we have some type of crazy groove on top of it.
Mm-hmm. Why do you take that approach?
I think dancers like it when music is always building. And it's a little bit harder to get away with a drop in energy than an increase in energy.
Mm-hmm.
So we start at a low level, and then we kick up the energy from there. Some bands get away with major drops in energy while they play, like Great Bear. It's really famous for
throwing you off the cliff.
Exactly. Yeah.
And usually they catch you on the other side.
And
but
really
not always.
But yeah, we do less of that. So our tendency is to always just increase.
Yeah. So when you talk about grooves as a guitar player, and because of the way we're doing things now, these interviews will be in two parts, and so you don't have a guitar with you right now. But it's a kind of like a strummy kind of groove. Mm-hmm. Like it's not like a hits kind of halftime groove.
Yep.
Is there any, can you do an interpretive dance of it or do anything to help our listeners understand?
Well, if you imagine that my hands are my guitar, I'm doing this all the time, constantly
yeah.
strumming. So I strum every single beat.
Mm-hmm.
And if I want to layer some sort of syncopation over the melody, I vary how much I emphasize certain strokes.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how I lay down a groove on the guitar. I also have the ability to damp the strings, and that can make kind of like a snare type sound on the instrument.
So cool. That's the one thing I have envy of that the piano can't do.
That's something that the piano can't do.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe on an acoustic piano you could reach over, dampen the strings.
It's a lot. You'd have to
It'd
have
be
a big
lot
arm.
Of work.
It's a big arm to dampen all those strings. Yeah, you could play prepared piano, but I love the way the fretted instruments can damp their strings like
yep.
that. So damping is when you press down on the strings, it stops them from resonating and cuts
yep.
off.
And it creates
their
a very
tone.
Like sharp percussive sound.
Yeah, it almost doesn't even have a pitch.
Yep.
You know, I think lots of people have done that, but I think we were talking about Nightingale's Flying Tent. I'm pretty sure there's some of that on there too. I think Keith is doing some on the mandolin. I
yep.
haven't listened to that recording for a while, but
that's something that Keith does too. It's kind of a staple of his groove.
Yeah.
Yeah. Johnny Cash actually would put a dollar bill through his guitar strings and then just play his guitar like a snare drum.
Huh.
Because that kind of just dampens the strings of the guitar with it, and then he can just, you know, focus on playing a rhythm. So I'm doing that, but just kind of intermittently.
Yeah. And then do you also do foot percussion?
I do foot percussion too. Yeah, I would say that Keith Murphy kind of popularized doing foot percussion for contra dance music, even though it's a tradition that comes from Quebec.
That's interesting. Was that Keith? Huh.
I think it would be safe to say that Keith originated that fad or that trend. I don't think it's going away.
Yeah. It'd be interesting because it's an old tradition in
yep.
a lot of different places in Quebec music and, you know, all sorts of things. And it's been in New England for a while. That's a very interesting question. But certainly, like, within the realm of New England contra dancing in terms
yep.
of popularizing that, I think that's safe to say.
Yep. I definitely started doing foot percussion because I saw Keith doing it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure
a
lot
of
people,
other people, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Keith was the role model for that for a lot of people. Even if he wasn't the first one to do it, that's not completely relevant, right? The
yep.
question is, you saw it, and
yep.
you were like, whoa. Like, I mean, Keith is known for just being like a rhythm machine.
Yep.
You know, as are you.
Yep, it's very similar.
Way,
there's
know?
Definitely a strong influence there.
Yeah, the fun thing about these interviews is that, you know, when I get to sit down with Keith or one of his bandmates and talk to them, you know, I could be like, well, where did Keith get this from? And kind of trace these things that we don't always know about. Do you have any, like, defining moments that you remember when you saw something and you're like, I have to do that?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's definitely that moment of going to Flurry. I would say that recently I've had some formative experiences in Europe, discovering both contemporary Scottish music and also the ball folk scene. So I've spent some time in Glasgow these past few years, and the level of musicianship over there is just incredible, and a lot of the music coming out of Glasgow and also Ireland and other parts of Scotland is very, very inspiring, kind of on a different level from the trad music that we've heard from past decades. Like Lunasa has kind of defined the decade before last, since we're in the 20s now, of trad Irish music. Mm-hmm. But now there's new kind of additions of Lunasa and bands like that. So I've been very inspired listening to bands like Emar and Talisk, to name a few, I've wanted to take some of their sound and incorporate it into my contradance style. And then on the continent, there's a lot of really amazing French and Belgian music coming out of Europe, which is for the ball folk scene, which, for people who don't know, is kind of like the European equivalent of contradancing. Except that the music is rooted in traditional French music from other areas of Europe, as opposed to New England and Irish and Scottish music. The dances are different, but the vibe of the scene is kind of exactly the same thing. Same type of people, same, like, you know, dudes in tie-dye skirts cuddling in a pile.
It's good to know that things don't change, you
know? They don't change at all.
Some things are universal.
Yeah, so there's a lot of bands over there that I've been inspired by, like Narragonia, Triodor, Boomchuck.
That Triodor is spelled D-H-O-O-R-E.
And it's not pronounced Triodor in Flemish.
Right, but I don't speak Flemish.
My best attempt would be Triodore. I think that's the correct-ish pronunciation, although I don't speak Flemish. So, so those were formative moments for me. Discovering those worlds and kind of selecting pieces of those genres and bringing them back to my dance playing.
Yeah, so let's unpack that a little bit. Going back to the Scottish scene that you're talking about, what are the you don't have to be able to quantify music. You can just, you hear something and it galvanizes you and you don't have to know why.
Yep.
But what are the elements of that you think are most relevant to bring into your dance playing?
Well, this is less applicable for me, but a lot of the melody playing is very fast, energetic, and really precise.
Good thing you're in a band with Kathleen Phones.
There you go. I'm not doing the fast, precise melody playing, but it's definitely defined kind of my musical aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of that repertoire is
I was thinking about tempo for a second. Is fast in tempo or in notes and drive feeling?
I would say mostly tempo here.
Uh-huh.
So Nova is a band that likes to play faster than most contradance bands.
Do you have like a beats per minute of what that might be?
Yeah, so I would say that a lot of contradance bands, especially from decades past, have liked to play in the ballpark of like 108 beats per minute or 112 beats per minute, maybe 116 if they're going crazy. Nova, so we actually have a beats per minute tracker that we use sometimes to just have a look at where we are, so we don't go off the rails. But we tend to play our starting slowish tempo is 116, and then we'll go up to the high 120s.
Mm-hmm. High 120s.
Yeah, if we're really going crazy. If we're really going crazy, we might be up to 128, which is quite fast. But I would say that we gravitate towards tempo between 116 and 120.
Yeah.
And I remember actually that Nor'easter was notorious for playing at a faster tempo too.
Yeah. I mean, this is your interview, not mine.
I know.
But
it's something that I always really appreciated about dancing to Nor'easter, because I always felt like the tempo was a bit faster, and I really enjoyed dancing to faster music.
Absolutely. And I think the trick with that is we would start at a moderate tempo,
yep,
like 118, and wait until the dancers had the dance.
Yep.
And then sometimes you speed up intentionally. Sometimes it just happens with the excitement between, yeah, the musicians and the dancers. And we would always watch the floor.
Yep.
You know, sometimes one of us would be like, woo, is this too fast? We put the brakes on, or think about putting the brakes on. But every time you put the brakes on, it just pulls some of the energy. It's really hard to do that without, yep, losing.
Once you get going, you can't really pull back without losing something.
I do remember one year, it was our first time playing the Dawn Dance. It's this 12-hour dance in Brattleboro. And we were, of course, the graveyard shift. So it's like 6 a.m. Mm-hmm. And the sun, yep, is coming up. And we had just come back from Burning Man. And we were feeling our oats. We were very, yeah, excited. And just the energy in that room, in order to dance all night, you just have to keep going, going, going. And Jeff Petrovich was calling it. And he was calling all no walkthroughs.
Yep.
16 dances in a row, something like that.
It's really a lot.
With no walkthroughs, just, yeah, to keep the dancers moving. It was insane. And so the only way we could deal with that is just to push the energy like crazy. And there was one point at which we were screaming from the stage and the dancers were screaming back. And I clocked the recording later because I made a little recording from the stage, and it was 1:35.
Yeah.
Which I would not do under any other circumstances except, yep, in that moment. But just to frame this tempo conversation, when I started playing for Contras, I asked Lisa Greenleaf, the caller, what her favorite tempo was. And she said about 117 is the standard, like, yeah, New England contra tempo. And so you guys like to play on the slightly...
on the slightly faster side.
Faster.
And it kind of... I would say that we're careful not to let the tempo get away from us before the dancers have gotten the dance. But I think that it's our tendency to speed up, because a lot of the music we're listening to is at much faster tempos than 117, for example, mm-hmm, especially jigs. So
if, yeah,
if you're playing a jig, there's far fewer notes per measure than in a reel. And so you can get away with playing it at like 135 without it sounding ridiculously fast, especially if you're a very smooth, precise melody player. So we're used to listening to jigs at like 135, and maybe playing them at 135 in a session, but that's not acceptable for a contra dance. And so we slow it down, and we're still, you know, at 122, and it feels slow to us.
Yeah, I've noticed that when I accompany pipers and other people,
yeah,
and they play for the occasional contra dance, we have to remember that the jigs go this low beat speed that they're not used to.
Yep, and the same goes for reels. Like we'll still play a reel at 120 and think it feels slow compared to how we hear it in our heads.
How do you know if the tempo is okay? Is that your job as a rhythm player?
It's mostly my job. Part of it is thinking about the number. So like just the BPM, if we have a BPM tracker out, and knowing what the generally acceptable range is for a contra dance. But I think that the better way to do it is to watch the dancers and see if they are managing to perform the moves of the dance on time at the tempo you've set.
Mm-hmm.
If a large portion of the dance floor is performing a balance late, for example, then you know you're going too fast.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's really the band's job to adjust to the dancers as opposed to the dancers trying to keep up with the band. There's a lot of management that the band can take on, which isn't just the role of the caller. The band needs to be paying attention to the floor all the time and seeing how the dancers are doing. And if the dance is moving too fast for the dancers, then the tempo needs to come down a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Before the caller has to tell the band to bring the tempo down.
Right. Because some callers don't want to interfere, and so they won't say something unless it's really dramatic.
Yep.
And by then, somebody on the floor is probably already not having a good time.
Yep.
Yeah. Do you enjoy that role?
I do a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot of things to keep in mind at once, but I think I find it very satisfying to be watching the dance closely and do something like watch for a specific move in the dance and then change the music to fit it. And you can just tell that the dancers are getting a lot out of it if it's done right.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for instance, if there's a Petronella in a place to dance, which is a very, very... notably balancy figure, I'll do that I'll often do that dampening thing with my left hand to play that kind of snare sound on the guitar to emphasize that moment, even if I wouldn't otherwise have chosen that for just the music by itself.
Right.
And then that'll go really well with the Petronella and often dancers clapping afterwards.
Right.
As opposed to having dancers clap over a piece of music that doesn't want to be clapped to, you can change the music and make it want to be clapped to, because dancers are going to clap on a Petronella whether you want them to or not.
Yes, they are. It's interesting, like, you know, contra music is so many things these days, like modern contra music. And throughout this interview series, you know, we've already spoken with like Dudley Loffman and Charlie Pilzer. And there's a lot of, just like contra dancing happens in different places and different sizes, there's all these different kinds of music and moods that we play for it. And you mentioned that you don't play New England tunes a lot.
Not a ton, no.
Yeah. Why is that?
I would say that just because of all the influence I have from playing Irish and Scottish music, there's less New England repertoire that's kind of on the tip of my tongue or in the stuff that I listen to. There's tons of great classic New England tunes, which people play all the time for contra dancing, which I know and pull out if I'm playing with a group of new people. But I feel like that corpus of tunes is a bit smaller. Someone who knows a lot about New England repertoire might disagree. But I feel like there's a set of standard New England tunes. Probably if you looked at the tunes that Lissa Schneckenberger recorded on her album Dance, that would be like the set of classic New England tunes that people play for contra dancing all the time. And so there's lots of great ones, but there's just less of them than there are Irish and Scottish tunes, and especially contemporary tunes. I play a lot of contemporary contra dance tunes, and I don't know if I would classify them as classic New England repertoire. Like Keith Murphy compositions, I don't know if you could classify those as classic New England tunes, but they're like they're standard contra repertoire, and we play a lot of them.
Right. I mean, what is a classic New England tune? Right.
Something like Fisherman's Hornpipe is what comes to mind.
Fisher's Hornpipe. Yeah. And then, but there are these tunes that, like, what makes a classic New England tune? Is that it's old and from New England? Or is that if you go to a typical contra dance, you'll hear the band playing it? Or if you go to a jam of contra dance musicians, you'll hear it? You know, there are a lot of very common tunes in the contra dance repertoire that are actually modern tunes written very recently, not in New England, like Bus Stop Reel and Flying Home to Shelley. And, you know, other things.
Yeah.
And then there are Irish tunes that have made their way into what we consider classic, like Lady Anne Montgomery. And then there's, you know, what we think of more as New England tunes.
Yep. Yeah. At that point, it's just taxonomy.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and it's a stylistic thing. Like when you say you don't play many New England tunes, that's not unusual for a contra band today to say.
Interestingly enough, like if you go to a square dance in Quebec, you'll hear only traditional Québécois tunes.
Yeah.
Maybe some like recent Québécois tune compositions. But if you go to a contra dance, you hear a giant mixture of tunes from different sources.
Yeah.
Which is pretty interesting. So I feel like the contra dance repertoire is more of a melting pot than you have in other dance traditions.
Yeah, it hasn't maybe always been that way completely, but it is now. Like, that is the normal for many places. And I think that's kind of cool about contra dancing. You know, you could play a tune from Quebec and then a tune from Appalachia and then a tune from Scotland or Ireland. And, you know, when you say, oh, I'm really into French ball folk tunes, no one's going to bat an eye at that and be like, what, you weirdo?
Yep.
You know, or they're not going to say, well, that's not traditional.
Yep.
Some people might. Some people, I mean, there are contra dances still that feel like New England contra dances. They dance different dances. They dance differently. They might be a little slower, and they play different music.
Yep. I'm thinking of, like, Nelson, New Hampshire, for example.
Yeah.
That's like a contra dance frozen in time.
Do you enjoy dancing at those kinds of dances?
I think that from a curiosity and historical perspective, yes. But I think that I really enjoy contemporary contra dancing most of all. I think that a lot of that contra dancing has innovated a lot over the past, I don't know, several decades. Mm-hmm. And I personally enjoy the way that it has changed compared to what people were dancing back in the 60s or the 70s, like faster music, more interesting choreography. And also the music has in my opinion improved since back then. Like, I'd much rather dance to something like Nightingale than, you know, boom chuck piano with a fiddle, which is lovely, but isn't quite as exciting.
Right. And so Nightingale, as an example, is bringing a lot of different things to the table at once. There's the sheer musicianship of their playing. You know, like, there's a difference between someone who has a day job and then plays fiddle at mm-hmm. night playing for concert dances, which is so important. And, you know, like, I don't want to get on a whole soapbox about that, but is it like, different people want different things out of their music, mm-hmm. right? Some people want it to sound perfect. Mm-hmm. Some people want it to be from the heart. Some people just want that nice energy that doesn't take a lifetime of skill mm-hmm. to have. But Nightingale, they have that precision, and then also, like, their arrangements and the yeah. concepts worked out in their arrangements.
Yeah, I find the complexity of arrangement in contemporary contra dance music to be very compelling.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
As a dancer?
As a dancer, and also just as a listener. I mean, it's hard to separate the two for me. And as I've evolved and started playing music for contra dancing much more than I contra dance, I'm definitely thinking about the music from a more musical perspective, not mm-hmm. just as something to dance to. But even particularly as a dancer, I really appreciate listening to a band like Nightingale or Elixir, maybe like Wild Asparagus, for example, and dancing to lots of different grooves and ideas. And you can be dancing, and then something happens in the music, and it can be very exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you play the kind of music you'd want to dance to.
Yeah.
Go figure.
yeah, I think it's generally true that the bands that I like dancing to the most are made up of people who are dancers or were avid contra dancers back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Like the members of Wild Asparagus used to contra dance all the time. Before they were a dance band,
mm-hmm.
And so they know what they like to dance to back in the day, and the same goes for other bands. And Nova kind of grew out of us being passionate dancers and wanting to make music that was exciting to dance to, even though we dance less now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting, like. Bands like Wild Asparagus, you know, they were one of the first touring bands mm-hmm. from New England. And they were some of the first folks in Swallowtail and that scene to bring in all these other influences, you know. Mm-hmm. Also Randy Miller, you know, studying Irish music and bringing mm-hmm. a lot of Irish tunes
yeah,
into the
true.
Contra repertoire. You know, it seems like there was a whole, like a kind of generation, so to speak, of musicians who did that.
Mm-hmm.
And then for this generation of contra musicians, it's just what you do.
It's just what you do. You play, like, Irish and Scottish tunes for contra dancing.
Yeah. Tunes from Quebec, tunes... I mean, Quebec's a little closer. Like,
yep.
Like, the Maine and Quebec connection is quite close.
Yep.
But Irish and Scottish, I mean, it's not even as much that there's Irish immigrants playing for contra dancing as that our contra musicians are going out and seeking out mm-hmm. Irish and Scottish tunes and actively bringing them into the repertoire.
Yep.
You know, yep. And David Surrett did his book of Balfolk tunes mm-hmm. years ago.
Yep.
And, you know, Nightingale played many French tunes. We keep yep. talking about Nightingale, but we're sitting here in Brattleboro. It seems impossible
yep.
not to talk about Nightingale when we talk about your early influences.
Yep. Yeah, so Nightingale was definitely a big early influence for me. But now I would say that I'm more inspired by a lot of the contemporary Irish and Scottish music and Balfolk music that I listen to. But then when I think about it, that's the type of stuff that was inspiring Nightingale back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
They were listening to Balfolk bands and taking French tunes and playing them for contra dancing.
Yeah. So what do you do? You talked about this a little bit, but what do you do to take a tune from a different dance idiom and make it work for a concha?
Well, you first have to make sure that it's an acceptable tempo. There's a lot of stuff. So for example, in the ball folk tradition, you might play reels for skatish, which are slow reels. So you could take that tune and speed it up to contra dance tempo. Like 96 beats per minute or 100 beats per minute is a pretty standard skatish tempo. That would be too slow for a contra dance most of the time. Mm-hmm. So you could take that tune and play it at 112. Or you could take a mazurka, which is a dance in three, and play it just like a waltz, which is something that Nova does a lot. We play a lot of mazurkas as waltzes.
Yeah, because mazurkas are great. So do you have a skatish in mind that we could sing a little bit of to get an example?
I don't think I do.
Like there's...
Do you have one in mind?
I don't know. I'm trying to think. I have some uncommon ones in mind.
Uh-huh.
Like there's one that Buddy System played as a contra dance tune. And I just can't remember how it goes. It's just hilarious. We even recorded it. My brain has just been not in music land. It's pretty fascinating.
Oh, yeah. There's this tune that Nova plays called La Sansonette.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which is a classic ball folk. Yeah, that one.
Yeah.
And so that's skatish tempo, but we just play it like a reel.
With so skatish tempo would be like...
Yep. So that's a little bit plodding. It's great for a skatish. But Nova just plays it like bum 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 ba dum ba boom with foot percussion. We make it sound like something totally different, but it's a tune we've taken from classic ball folk repertoire.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a Buddy System recorded a tune from a French band. Mm-hmm. They're called Baldy Swing. And I asked them if we could use their skatish, and they said yes. And then we sent them we sent them an album to thank them.
Uh-huh.
And I never heard from them. And I never know. I don't worry about this too much, but I always wondered if they just hated it because they had this beautiful skatish with all this lilt and groove, and it was kind of beautiful and sexy.
Yep.
And we turned it into this reel that stripped some of its magic away, but added a new kind of magic, right?
Yep.
And so, you know, it's just this brazen thing we do is we take all these things and we turn them into contra dance tunes.
Yep. That's kind of, I mean, for me, that's kind of the big magic about playing for contra dance is that I can take any genre of music that inspires me and do that thing for contra dancing. You could even take pop music and play for contra dancing, and lots of bands do. Like Great Bear used to play just straight up pop songs, like the Daft Punk song Get Lucky they do for contra dancing.
Yep.
And it works great. It's awesome.
Yep. Do you like dancing to things like that?
I love it. It's super, I would say it's exciting and it's refreshing because I listen to pop music as well. And it's fun to be able to contra dance to pop music as well as like New England tunes.
It's kind of like our modern version of singing squares, right? I mean, like singing squares to us are kind of chestnuts now, but they were just the songs that were popular at the time. And people wanted to go dance to their local pop songs. So in that sense, it's not that different.
Yep.
And it's not that scandalous.
Yeah, I would say that any scandal there was about taking a pop song and putting it in a contra dance has been removed. It's just been done so much now.
Yeah.
And then some crazy individuals are even dancing to techno music and making techno music for contra dancing.
Yes, those crazy, crazy kids. Do you like techno contra?
I do, a lot.
What do you like about it?
I would say that it's exactly how I wish actual clubbing was.
Yes! Yes, again, this interview isn't about me, but that's why I started doing it. It's because I loved going to raves, but I hated the club scene.
Yeah.
In raves.
Exactly. It's great. You get to dance to exciting electronic music and have crazy lights and stuff. Except that you're going into a crowded, sweaty place full of a lot of people that you probably know, doing a form of dancing that you already enjoy. And then in the techno music, there's a lot of allusions to the trad music that you're already excited about. So like, even if you're, you know, if you're listening to a techno beat, there's probably going to be a fiddle tune on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just the new and improved regular clubbing experience for me.
And it's a safe environment.
Yep. And there's no alcohol, but
yeah,
that's okay.
Despite the lack of alcohol.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's kind of, like, I think we think of modern day concert dance as a dry activity, but mm-hmm. it's not always.
It's not always.
And it hasn't always been,
mm-hmm.
you know, depending on the community.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting thing. A difference that I see between the ballfolk scene and the concert dance scene is that alcohol is a big accepted part of the ballfolk scene.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you go to a ballfolk dance, there's probably going to be an open bar at the dance, and people will, you know, dance a dance, get a beer, dance another dance, and do that for the entire night. And it's alcohol is a bit of a taboo thing at a contra dance.
Do you see that at VA's in Quebec?
Yeah. So you can drink at a dance in Quebec.
I remember seeing that too. Yeah. There's a more of a party atmosphere.
Yep.
But I feel like modern contra dancers, they just want to get their dance on and they don't want anything to get in the way of it.
Exactly.
They don't want the caller to talk too long. Mm-hmm. They don't want to wait too long. They don't, you know, they just want to get right to it.
Yep.
And there's less of that party atmosphere.
Yep. I personally enjoy both aesthetics.
Yeah.
Those are my thoughts on that.
Yeah. You know, I am not a historian, and I'm sure someone like David Millstone or many other people would, or the people who lived through it would know this more. But, you know, I wonder if it's also like a lot of the concert dances around the country were formed with the Dudley dancers
mm-hmm.
and the kind of hippie folk movement.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know if that's when alcohol became a thing that you don't have at a concert dance or not. I don't know.
Yep.
Somebody write to me and tell me how I'm wrong, please.
Yep.
Thank you, everyone. So it's interesting to watch, and for those of you who may not know a lot about ballfolk, it's really a scene. And it's a scene where you pull in dances from different styles. You can do different kinds of dances from France. You can do dances from Brittany as opposed to, like, the rest of France. There's Cayley dances that happen there.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens throughout Europe.
Yep.
And it's like there's a lot of young people there, and they're magical, and they often have cool lighting
mm-hmm.
and a lot of atmosphere.
Yeah, that's another thing that's really inspired me about the ballfolk scene is that, I mean, you do this at a techno dance, but I wish that we could have, like, fog machines and crazy lights and pounding subs all the time at contra dances.
Pounding subs.
It's the best.
It's funny that as you say that, I'm sure there are some people who are listening and being
and
like,
"No!"
Oh,
I personally love that.
Like, you're ruining dancing. You know, and that's a, just so you know, that's a totally valid reaction to have. And that's the thing, is that the concha dance, it exists in so many different forms mm-hmm. right now. But we have to try to preserve all the ones we want to preserve.
Mm-hmm.
So that people... Now, like, say you're in a band like Nova.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you will ever play, like, a beginner community dance anymore. I'm sure you have back in the day.
Oh, yeah. And we've done some in the past few years, for sure.
Do you play differently for a dance like that?
I would say that often it's mostly limited based on what the sound is like. I'm going to do... So I generally play a lot with an octave pedal on the guitar.
Mm-hmm. So that makes your bass notes an octave lower.
Exactly. So it's like I'm playing a bass guitar at the same time that's following along to what my guitar is doing. And that won't work on an older sound system or a system that may not have a sub. And so I'll do less of that. And I'll do a lot more of that if I'm playing with a sound engineer like Ed Howe, who loves bass as much as I do.
Yeah.
And will bring a sub or two.
Or four.
Or four to the gig. I would say maybe we might play slower if that's the aesthetic that the dancers prefer.
Mm-hmm.
Because you probably know this, but dancers love to share their opinions about tempo with you.
What? Yes, they do.
So if we get enough people asking us to slow down, we'll play generally slower for an evening.
Yeah. So you'll play the same tunes. You'll just try to slow them
exactly.
down a little bit.
Yeah.
You don't have a second. I know, like, I have some bands that would play different tunes at a beginner's
mm-hmm.
dance. Like, as a piano player, I might play differently.
Yeah. Would you play more of a boomchuck piano style?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would play more of a boomchuck piano style.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I might kind of approximate that similar type of thing on the guitar. Play less of a syncopated guitar style. And do more of a boomchucky or a really straightforward type of thing.
Yeah. Simplify the phrasing.
Yep, exactly.
Do you use chords as phrasing?
Yeah, totally. So I feel like it's the job of the musicians to make the dancers hear the phrasing in eight part chunks really, really, really well. And a good way to do that is to change chords only every 4 or 8 measures.
Mm-hmm.
So what do I do specifically there? In tunes, you can often kind of compare phrases to questions and answers. So you leave a phrase hanging and then you let a phrase resolve. I try to consistently follow that. So for 1 8-bar chunk, I'll leave that phrase hanging on a 4 or 5 chord. Then the next 8-bar chunk, I resolve it. And that kind of blocks the pieces up in a way that the brain can handle. Because we're used to hearing questions and answers in music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that helps your body subconsciously know where the phrasing is. You know, I think it would be fun to take a poll of, like, what do dancers anchor to mm-hmm. while they're dancing.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a new dancer, I listened for the bass lines.
Yeah.
Like, rather than the tune.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I found my way around the dance.
I would say that that's definitely what I do, especially if you're listening to kind of a muddy sound situation. You can always hear when the when the bass line goes back to a 1 chord, and then you know the phrase just ended.
Yeah, yeah, and so you're aware of that power that you wield.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think us rhythm players, we enjoy our power,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you know that you have that power to phrase things. Like I feel like the fiddle tune is important. Like if you took out the tune, the dance wouldn't feel the same.
Mm-hmm.
But the bass line is like the subconscious phrasing that can go underneath everything mm-hmm. and help you anchor yourself.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely what I think about the most. I'm definitely a bass line focused accompanier.
Yeah.
Rhythm player. I'm just thinking about where my bass line is going and then the rest of the chord follows. That might also be a dadgad thing.
Yeah.
So I play in dadgad tuning, which compared to standard tuning, I would say encourages a more vertical movement on the neck. And so you kind of just move where your bass note is on the lowest string, and then the rest of the strings take care of themselves and create some kind of sussy version of the chord you were defining with your bass note.
Yeah.
So I just move around that bass note and the chords play themselves.
So dadgad is an alternate guitar tuning, for those of you who don't know about that. And so rather than a standard guitar tuning, you tune the strings to D, A, D, G, A, D. And so there's a lot of repetitions of strings, and it sounds mm-hmm. really good with open. It's a very open sound.
Yep.
And so that makes the chords different on the neck of the guitar. And because you have that low D ringing there, you can just slide your hands, like the patterns, up and down the neck of the guitar, like you were saying.
Yep.
So yeah. It changes the kinds of bass lines you play.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think some dadgad players, maybe not in contra dance as much, but in other traditions, they're kind of notorious for just changing chords whenever they feel like it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's part of the style to kind of anticipate a chord or jump around because mm-hmm. you can just slide back and forth so easily. Is that different for you at a session than at a contra dance?
Totally. That's a great subject you're bringing up, because at an Irish session, especially in like Glasgow, for example, it's kind of guitar player code that you play a tune differently every single time you play it. And you're constantly listening for new ways to interpret chord changes in the melody.
Mm-hmm.
So if a note flies by, let's say like the 6th degree of the scale, you can latch onto it one time and play a 4 chord. The next time round, you don't. Or you anticipate it in some way. But for dancing, I think it's really important to play backup, which is repetitive and predictable, and not a ton of stuff is going on because people are only half listening to you.
Mm-hmm.
You're kind of trying to play to their subconscious because they're focusing on dancing, or most people are focusing on dancing. So I'm more likely to play a chord progression that's just like 1-1-4-4-6-6-5-5. At a session, you might be inclined to be like, oh yeah, 1-4-1-6-5-3-over-1-4, all over the place. And so if I'm playing in an Irish session, I would say that I'm more of a predictable guitar player than a lot of the strictly session guitar players are, because mm-hmm. I like that predictability that I take from my contra dance playing.
Mm-hmm.
But then I also play more like a session player compared to my dance playing.
Yeah. And it seems like you don't mind, like you don't think of it as like simplifying your playing as much as it is playing for a different purpose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not like you're like, oh, I'm bored. I can't play any cool chords right now. It's more like you're doing something different.
Yep. You have a different goal in mind, as opposed to entertaining the listener who's listening really closely to all your choices, or entertaining yourself while you're playing.
Or at a session, you're entertaining yourself while you're playing. And
exactly.
No one's listening.
Yeah. As a dance player, I'm more focused on playing what the listener who's not listening very closely wants to hear.
Yeah.
As opposed to being interesting all the time.
Yeah. And ideas that a contra dance can bear more repetition. They almost need more repetition for mm-hmm. them to get through to the dancers.
Yeah. Honestly, if I'm playing a tune for contra dancing, I won't make any chord substitutions after playing the pattern that I just played for two times to the tune most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like you have to do, for anything to register with the dancers, you have to do it consistently.
Mm-hmm.
At least two times to the tune.
Mm-hmm.
So if I wanted to substitute the six for the one, I would only do it after not making that substitution for at least two times to the tune. And then I would make that substitution consistently for another two whole times through the dance.
Mm-hmm. Where did that come from?
I think that's a philosophy that comes a lot from Keith.
Mm-hmm.
He's very consistent and believes in not throwing too much at the dancers at once.
Yeah.
Also, I'm playing simply, but in a satisfying way. So that's something that I've definitely taken from his guitar style.
Mm-hmm.
And then also going and listening to a lot of players who play all over the place, I've reaffirmed that that's kind of what I prefer to listen to.
Yeah. I also do the two times through mm-hmm. thing. For me, it was Elixir. Maybe Anna and Ethan, we were in a workshop, and they mentioned that, and I kind of made a mental note of that. But it makes sense, because the first time, the dancers just need to experience it, but they can't respond to it yet unless mm-hmm. it happens again.
Yep.
You know, so many times the band will get into some cool groove and my body would finally start to get into yep. it in the dance, and then they would change it, and I'm like, no!
Yep.
Yeah.
Totally. I feel like there's like a dopamine system we have when we listen to music, which is you expect something and then it happens, and then you get a little dopamine spike. So by doing something interesting, you set up, so you do it once and your brain goes, oh, I mean the listener's brain goes, oh, that was interesting. Let me listen for that again. You do it again. Okay, I see a pattern now. You expect it the third time and it happens and you're satisfied.
Yeah. I think modern contra dancers enjoy the element of surprise,
mm-hmm.
but they want to be in on the surprise
yep.
most of the time. Mm-hmm. And so it's a fun kind of game to play of like letting them in on the surprise. Like if you're doing mm-hmm. a build, they know something is about to happen.
Yep.
You know, like Nightingale would have these very dramatic surprises, but I always knew that something was coming.
Mm-hmm.
You don't always know when, and mm-hmm. that's what makes it fun.
Yep.
So do you play that way?
Yeah, I mean, we definitely put those surprises in predictable places if you're someone who's familiar with our arrangement. That's one of the joys I have of listening to or dancing to bands that I'm familiar with, is that I know that that something crazy is going to happen, and I can kind of hear it coming, because I'm already familiar with their arrangement because I've danced so many times to it.
Mm-hmm. And you don't mind that. It's not like you hear an arrangement once and it's ruined for you forever.
No, the exact opposite.
Right. Yeah. Well, maybe that's another way of taking the music that, like, we want familiarity,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, you go to the Gilmanton, New Hampshire Contra Dance, and they dance chorus jig, and they all sing along with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the same as a singing square, or dancing to get Daft Punk, Get Lucky.
Yep.
You know, or knowing when Great Bear is about to do the crazy thing.
Yep.
Or whatever it is. you know?
Yep, totally. It's definitely the same thing.
Yeah. So let's talk about medleys.
Medleys, oh yeah.
Tell me your thoughts about medleys.
Do you mean contra dance medleys?
Yeah, in the context of contra dance, or not. We can talk about anything you want, but...
So you mean like stringing dances together, not tunes together, right?
Oh, I'm sorry. I mean tunes that you would play for okay, one contra cool. dance. I understand now.
Because
yes.
I have a very strong opinion about one of those subjects.
Well, tell me. We got all day here.
But before we talk about tune medleys,
okay.
Dance medleys are something that dance organizers love, but people should know that dance musicians dislike because they're a lot of work.
A lot of work.
So if you really need to have your dance medley, make it really short or switch bands halfway through, please.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot of effort for a dance musician.
And so this is a medley of dances strung together.
Exactly.
I think it became popular at NEFA.
Uh-huh.
So you do the dance 5 or 6 times through and then on to the next.
Yeah.
For like 20 minutes to 30 minutes usually.
Yeah.
But I've seen ones that are an hour long.
Or an hour and 15 long, even.
That's yeah. brutal.
As someone who plays, I mean, this is true for all instruments, but I play a very physical instrument, like my guitar. I mean, my arm is moving the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
And if I play for, I mean, 10 minutes is a long time to be doing that, but also 30 minutes is a very long time to be doing that. You can, especially if I'm doing foot percussion, that's like running for 30 minutes and lifting weights at the same time for 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, it's bad for musicians from an injury standpoint to be playing for that long without stopping.
Mm-hmm.
And then it also like, because you want to be changing tunes for every time the dance changes, ideally, you kind of throw out all your old tune medleys and arrangements from your carefully crafted arcs that you've scoped for a 10-minute dance, because now you're trying to do the same thing for a bazillion different dances that don't have the same moves in the same places
mm-hmm.
and change all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So those are both things that make medleys challenging.
Yeah. They're fun for variety once in a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like a medley occasionally if it's shared with another band and we can switch off.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it, like, you know, you have the opportunity to start really small and kind of string multiple tune medleys together and make a big arc. Crowfoot has a really awesome, like, suite of tunes, which is like 14 minutes long, that they do on one of their albums.
Mm-hmm.
And that type of really long arc, starting with like some really sparse jigs and playing jigs for 6 minutes, and then playing, you know, like 4 reels in a row afterwards, is a great way that one could play music for a dance medley.
Mm-hmm.
Except you stretch that over 30 minutes.
Right. Yeah, we haven't talked about Crowfoot a lot in this interview. They're a very groovy band.
They're a very groovy band.
Style.
Yeah, I am. Yeah, I've definitely been influenced by them a lot. Adam Broom, who's the guitar player in Crowfoot, also plays in Dadgad.
Mm-hmm.
But we have very, I would say that we have somewhat different rhythm styles,
mm-hmm.
But we also both play in a very percussive way. And Adam makes some great chord choices that I've kind of picked up on and started imitating.
Mm-hmm.
Crowfoot's, I would say that Crowfoot's arrangements are as complex as Nightingale's were, but in a different way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And now you can hear Adam and Jage in their band Mavish.
Yep, that's right.
Yeah. They're still
doing the same thing again, but with Matthew Olwell on flute.
Yeah. Yeah, Crowfoot was one of the bands when I saw them. I was like, oh, I want to do that.
Yep.
I think it was just dancing to them. They had this way of... I mean, it's a little corny, but as a dancer, I felt for the first time like all the boundaries between everyone in the hall disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
And we were all dancing as like one organism.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like they're watching the dancers all the time and just locking in, and like the boundary between the band and the caller and the dancers all starts to disappear. And I mean, it sounds so hokey to say out loud.
Yep.
But it was a really transformative experience for me.
Yeah, it's kind of magic.
Yeah.
Yeah. I find Crowfoot's music to be super mesmerizing in a different way than other bands' music. Because I think that with other bands, I'm listening to the groove a lot. Mm-hmm. And Crowfoot somehow gets away with just totally mesmerizing you with playing amazing melodies in an amazing way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's groove, but you're not there being like, oh yeah, 4-5-1, yeah, like you are when you're listening to a band like Great Bear.
Yeah.
You're like, holy crap, I'm totally entranced by this fiddle playing.
Yeah. And they'll just take the concept and play it for 10 minutes straight. Yeah,
and it's just like super smooth and you just get lost in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of also, the Mean Lids get away with that exact same type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
They're another band that I really like.
Yeah, they just take you, it's like one groove experience per dance.
Mm-hmm.
And then each dance is a mood and a feeling and you just go deeper and deeper and deeper.
Yeah. I find that dancing to the Mean Lids puts me in like a flow dancing state more than dancing to any other band because it's so trancey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean that was one of my rationales for techno contra.
Mm-hmm.
Is like I feel like contra dancing is inherently trancey.
Yep.
It can be. It doesn't have to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it can be if you play up that side of it.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think that, would you ever play one tune for a whole dance?
Totally. If I were to play one tune for a dance, it would need to have a really kind of intense arc to it to keep it interesting. And something that we do often is play something as a half speed tune and then play it as a full time tune.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of go back and forth between the two. I don't think that playing a single tune the same way for an entire dance would cut it for me. But if you take the tune and slowly build it for the entire dance and maybe drop it back down at the end, that can be very satisfying.
Yeah.
Or do something really dramatic in the middle to change it.
Yeah. What's your favorite arc to play for a dance?
For a one tune medley?
Yeah.
I would say the The thing that I'd reach for most would be starting with something that's half time, playing it that way for like 3 or 4 minutes, then moving to full time and building it up as a really exciting thing. So you start with it feeling like kind of a marchy, trancey thing, and then you kind of let the beat drop and play it as a full time tune.
Mm-hmm.
If you know what I mean.
Yep. I do. That's very satisfying.
Yeah.
Again, the dancers often think that something's coming, but they don't know what.
Yep.
They wonder, are we going to stay this way the whole dance?
Mm-hmm.
And then they find out.
Yeah. And that's a way you can make a one-tune medley sound like a two-tune medley.
Mm-hmm.
Except you've been playing the same thing the whole time.
Yeah, just kind of tweaks a little bit partway through.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find that you play the same way in your different contra bands?
Oh, it's totally different.
Yeah.
I play a lot with Jesse Ball and Matt Kenny, and our dynamic is like totally opposite.
I can imagine. What instruments do you play?
We play lots of instruments. I'm mostly playing guitar and mandolin in mm-hmm. that arrangement, but often we have Jesse playing piano and Matthew on drums, or Jesse playing guitar and me playing guitar at the same time,
mm-hmm.
And so. Rhythm is already doubly covered once I've entered the picture, and I can kind of do whatever I want musically and not have to support or carry the groove in mm-hmm. the way that I have to do
mm-hmm.
in Nova, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So I like to play melody or kind of reinforce the groove with complementary stuff or play on top of it. I can totally, I'm no longer bound to keeping my right hand going all the time,
mm-hmm.
keeping the rhythm going, which is very freeing in a certain way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a fun, like I get to experience that in Buddy System.
Yep.
Because Noah's a very rhythmic fiddler and he also does chops and feet. And
yep.
So when he's holding down the rhythm, I can do other things.
Yep. Yeah, Noah's a really unique person to play with because he totally carries the rhythm all by himself.
Yeah.
And I mean, in my experience playing with Noah, I felt like he's been carrying everything, and I'm just providing chords.
Uh-huh. How does that feel for you?
Great. It's super easy.
Yeah. You, like, don't mind if I do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's, different fiddlers have different ways of playing, and some fiddlers are very rhythmic, and they have that rhythm in their bowing.
Mm-hmm.
And then some fiddlers are more melodic.
Yep.
And it's just, it that's part of being a thoughtful accompanist, mm-hmm. right? Is to figure out what each fiddler needs. Or in your case with Jesse and Matthew, your lack of fiddler.
Yep.
Because that arrangement doesn't have a fiddler.
It often does.
Oh, okay.
So you'll often find us playing with various fiddle players. At Pinewoods last summer, we had a slot during the day where it was just us three,
uh-huh.
which is actually a really fun experience because we were able to play guitar, and drums for a contra session every day.
Are tunes still relevant in that setting?
Yeah, they are relevant, yeah. Although a lot of the time we just ditch tunes and play grooves.
Yeah.
But it can be really fun to play two guitars and drums. Because one person has chords, one person has the melody.
Yeah.
And you can drop out if you want, and everything's still being carried.
Have any bands based in Quebec and Montreal where you live?
I play a bit with a comedy based contra trio called Groovatron.
Wait, did you say comedy based?
It's a little bit comedy based.
That's great.
So we are a flute, oboe, and guitar band.
Sorry, I didn't mean to laugh, but you said comedy.
And Hotel Bell is our most dominant instrument in the group.
It's a dominating instrument.
Yeah.
Does anyone come when you ring the bell?
Sorry, what?
Does anything happen when you ring the bell?
I mean, people get annoyed. It dings. Yeah, so we play like the Canadian contra dance circuit, so Ottawa and the Montreal dance.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just have a lot of fun.
Yeah, even though you're not there right now. You're here in Brattleboro for
you're
the moment.
In Brattleboro, not playing for contra dances because there's no contra dances at the moment.
Right, which is why you can walk over to my house. So what do you think, so let me put this in perspective. How many years have you been playing for dances?
I think I played my first dance in 2014.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes 6 years at this point.
6 years.
Yeah.
And within that time, you've gone from learning to now playing dances all over the country.
Yep.
And how long have you been dancing?
This is 2010, so that's about a decade.
10 years.
Yeah.
But that's like almost half your life.
Yep.
Too.
Yep. So I'm, in terms of years I've spent in the contra dance scene and being a contra dance musician, it's not a lot compared to a lot of people, but it's still the majority of my life.
Yeah.
It's definitely defined all of my teenage and early adult years.
Yeah.
Being a contra dance musician.
Yeah, and you have music in the family. You know,
yep.
Your mom, Amanda, sings and plays concertina, and you have a sister who fiddles.
Yep, I have two sisters. One fiddles, one plays the cello.
Yeah.
And I have a brother who plays the whistle.
Yeah.
So we're all musical. Ellery, my oldest sister... she's younger than me. Also plays for contra dancing.
Mm-hmm. She's a great fiddler.
Yeah, she's great. I went on tour with Ellery this fall with Jesse in the Midwest, and we had a great time.
Fun.
Yeah, but I'm the contra dance fanatic of the bunch.
Uh huh. The one who does it the most.
The one who does it the most. Yeah.
So, how have you seen the dance scene change in the time that you've been in it? And do you think it's changing now? And where do you think it might go?
Well, there's been band changeover.
Yeah.
A lot of the bands that I was listening to and was very excited about back when I started are no longer with us.
Yeah.
Like Crowfoot, Nightingale, Great Bear.
Nor-easter. I mean, bands change. It's
bands
just
change.
A thing, you know?
So we have different bands. I feel like there's kind of a... I mean, there's tons of... There's like a handful of awesome... great bands out there, but kind of like the legendary, or at least the bands that I think of as legendary in my mind, are often not playing anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a big gap for new bands to make a name for themselves right now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that a lot has changed for contra dancing itself in that time. There has been a big movement to move towards gender neutral role terms in contra dancing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not someone who cares to get very involved in that discussion, but I think it's a great discussion to have.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going to comment on it because it can be very charged.
Right.
Otherwise, I think that's probably all that's changed. Techno contra dancing has become a thing in that time.
Yeah, it's still kind of a thing, which sometimes amazes me.
I think it's great. And you've been a big part in making that popular, which is really cool to see. Moving forward, I don't think that I have an evolution that I see coming. Maybe I might imagine more ballfolk couples dances making their way into the contra dance repertoire.
Yeah.
Nova has been trying really hard to encourage people to dance mazurkas and skatishas, kind of in the place of a waltz at contra dances.
Yeah.
Or like where people might do a hombo.
Mm-hmm.
At the break, we'll go, hey, we're going to play a mazurka, and you can mazurka to it, or you can waltz if you don't want a mazurka. And then people who've been to our ballfolk events or other ballfolk events might be able to mazurka to our mazurkas. Or even go, okay, we're going to do a skatish halfway through the break, and then we'll do a waltz for you.
Yeah, and I find that more and more people know them, which is what makes them fun.
Yeah, there's been a really cool movement of contra dance bands bringing in kind of the ballfolk scene to the U.S., like Eloise & Co., for example.
Yep, and that's Rachel Bell and Becky Tracy.
Yep.
And Rachel Bell and Susan Kevra have been playing together for a long time, and sometimes they play with Karen Axelrod, and Susan spent time in France, and they've gone over for ballfolks. And Andrew Van Nordstrand has spent time over there, and of course the members of Nightingale, Keith and Becky and Jeremiah, like we talked about. And, you know, I've done some, and there's lots of other folks. And so it's fun now. Like, Nova played at the Flurry last year and did ballfolk.
Yep, we were not on the billet as a contra dance band like we were 2 years ago.
Yeah.
We were the ballfolk band. Because we have our audience base as contra dancers, we convinced them all to come try ballfolk.
Yeah, and it's wonderful. And then we did the ballfolk this year at the Flurry.
Mm-hmm.
It was myself and Anna Patton, and then had Andrew and Noah Van Nordstrand join us.
Yep, awesome.
And it was so wonderful to come in, and the dancers are beginning to know what the dances are. And in D.C., there's a surgence of it there. And, you know, Jeremiah has been doing his floating bridge music camps and having musicians from France come over for years. And so, and there's a few other folks in the D.C. area who are building this scene up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's cool.
Yeah. There's a really...
And Jeremy Carter Gordon also teaches dancing around New England and beyond.
Yep.
Sorry, I can't mention everyone. I'm going to forget someone. So if I forgot you, you're still important.
Yep. Tons of people. Yeah, Nova has really enjoyed working with Jeremy as a workshop leader for events. He's been a really... I mean, him and Susan Kevra, I think, are kind of the leading faces of ballfolk teaching over here right now. And they're both doing an excellent job of bringing those dances to people who are primarily contra dancers.
And just to play devil's advocate, is there anything weird about that? Like, is there anything weird about the fact that we're taking this music from another country for a different style of dancing and bringing it here for our own?
Mm-hmm. Well, I know for a fact that you've played for contra dancing in other countries.
Mm-hmm.
And you've probably noticed that it's not quite the same.
Yeah, I love that.
So, I don't know. I kind of wonder if Europeans coming over here come to a ballfolk dance, will they go, gross, what are these Americans doing? They've totally butchered the Boré.
Right.
But I don't think there's anything problematic with it. Traditions change as they get spread. And it's kind of wonderful having more diversity in the type of dances that we do. And it's cool to see contra dancing spreading to countries besides the U.S.
Yeah, it's very popular in England, and there's a contra dance in Paris, and there's contra dancing in Denmark.
And in Australia, too. I went to a contra dance in Australia.
Yeah, right.
Earlier this year. Yeah, so it's in a lot of places. And it's also a little bit different. I noticed in Australia, people were doing balance the waves with handshake holds, not like interlocking thumb holds. And those are, that's just like a mark of how that type of thing changes as it gets disseminated to another place.
Yeah, even like when you do a pass-through, is it with hands or without, even in different parts of the U.S.?
Yeah,
that's different. Exactly. And so I think all of that is wonderful about a tradition that it settles in different places.
Yep.
To me, I think as long as we know what we're bringing in and don't lose our own tradition, you know, for example, if you go to the Scout House dance, you always, in Boston, you always do a hombo at the break.
Yep.
I think less and less so, because it's hard for bands to play a hombo who don't have experience with that kind of music. It's a lot to ask of a band to play this entirely different style, but also do it exactly right and at the right tempo with the right feeling. It's like, we want you to speak English all night, but can you also speak some Spanish perfectly just for a minute?
Yeah, well, I have my one hombo that I play when at a lot of dances someone comes up at the break and asks if we could play a hombo.
Yeah. And again, someone can write to me and tell me the answer to this, but we'll probably just explore it in a future episode, so stay tuned. But why is the hombo a, quote, traditional thing in contra dance, and has it always been that way? And, you know, I know some things, but that's a different topic for a different time. And so someday people will be like, why do we do a Scottish at the break? I don't know. We've just always done it. And there's this organic way that traditions just flow. People do what they're interested in and get inspired by things they run into.
Yep. Yeah, I think it's a great process.
Yeah. So maybe in 20 or 30 years, you see more of an international influence in contra music.
Yeah, I think that's likely.
Yeah.
Yeah, contra dance is different from ball folk because it's not a corpus of different dance styles from different places in the same way. But I think it's really, but ball folk is lots of traditional dances from different regions of France and other countries in Europe. And I could see the occasional contra dance fitting into the ball folk tradition really easily. You just add another type of dance and people learn it. And then once in a while a band goes, we're going to do a contra dance, then everyone does it. But it's not like we're going to replace contra dancing with like the Scottish or something. I think that those additions will always be kind of aside contra dancing. Like, okay, we do Scottish at the break now. I doubt that would change that much.
Yeah, just, you know, a new thing. Keep it interesting. Find something new to enjoy about it. I love mazurkas as waltzes. And more and more people now know how to mazurka to them.
Which is very cool to see.
Yeah, it's very cool.
A really fun thing that Kathleen and I experienced playing at the Edinburgh Contra Dance in Scotland was that we got asked to play a five-time waltz at a contra dance, and people knew how to do it. And now here, sometimes people are like, can you play a bourré at the break? And lots of people can do it. That's very exciting to see.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's been so fun to talk to you about all these things. Are there any last things you'd like to touch on today?
Nothing that comes to mind.
We've covered several countries and half of your life, so, you know.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. So I look forward to hearing what you do next.
Yeah, I look forward to hearing the other interviews you're doing on this podcast. Because I don't think any are out yet.
There's a couple out.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll go listen to them then.
Yeah, the interesting thing is that they're just so different. You know? And I love, like, I can ask the same questions to people and get very different answers depending on their perspective.
Yeah.
But they're all right answers. That's the thing, is that contra dancing is many different things to many different people.
Yep.
And that's what makes this project fun, is just the chance to explore all those different aspects, some of which some people are drawn to and some of which other people are drawn to.
Yep.
But all of which are valid. Yeah. Thank you so much for your time today, Everest. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me, Julie. It's been really fun.
Thanks for listening to ContraPulse. This project is supported by CDSS, the Country Dance and Song Society, and is produced by Ben Williams. Thanks to Great Meadow Music for the use of tunes from the album Old New England by Bob McQuillan, Jane Orzechowski, and Deanna Stiles. visit contrapulse.cdss.org for more info. Happy dancing!